Good evening. Welcome to the Solari Report. Today is Thursday, March 19th, 2020. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. I'm in the Netherlands. It's sunny and beautiful. I'm locked down in heaven. No trip to Switzerland. The travel restrictions stepped in the way, and we're hoping to postpone the Basel workshop until after the hang in August this summer, so maybe August or September, so stay tuned. I'm scheduled to return to the United States on April 24th. We're just going to see what happens. As I said, we're in a very fluid situation. On the website, we have a new and absolutely fantastic special Solari Report with Polly Tommy, who's the executive producer of Vaxxed. It's open to the public. I put my cards on the table. I told you this as soon as the coronavirus plandemic started. The big problem here is going to be the vaccine. Obviously, we have another big problem. It's called economics and politics. But this interview and watching Vaxxed 2 will really help you get your mind around the situation. This, like the missing money and the federal credit issues that you hear so much from me and on the Solari Report about, are two examples of really big lies. And the hard part about busting through these really big lies is it's very hard to get your mind around how bad it is and how big it is. Polly Tommy and the Vax crew have done an absolutely sensational job of helping you understand how big and bad this lie is and really punching through it. So my compliments, and I hope you find it interesting. Our missing money poster is Fed Chairman Jay Powell is turning out to run the biggest money shovel. It's on its way to being potentially a bigger money shovel than what we had in 2008. I'll talk about it in just a second. But the poster basically says, if you can print trillions for Wall Street, and they're up to in the repo market and the bond purchases over $6,000 per person, why can't you fund the pension funds and return the $21 trillion? Although if you listen to Mnuchin and Trump, they're talking as though they're going to return the $65,000 per person, one person at a time, $1,000 a month, but you better believe they're going to be conditions. News trends and stories. We've moved all the news trends and stories to subscriber only, so you're not going to see them when you come into the website. You got to log in to see the navigation bar. That'll take you to news trends and stories with the graphic down at the bottom. And remember, those are now in table press, so much easier to manipulate search and sort of access stories over time. Events, again, the Basel workshop has been postponed. We'll reschedule sometime after the late summer. Hopefully things will come back to normal. I'm interviewing Thomas tomorrow to post next week on the Solari Report. The title is Fear Not, and we're going to talk about what Steiner says about pandemics and situations like this. We have three teas with Catherine in June, one in Montreal, one in Lake Geneva, and one in Amarillo, Texas. I'm just going to keep operating as though it's full steam ahead. And then the Lake Constance hang was sold out, and then one person unfortunately had to cancel. So we now, again, have one slot open. If you want us to mail a brochure, just send us a note at hang2020@solari.com or customer service or ask Catherine, whichever you want. We'll mail one out to you. Our theme tonight is going to the mattresses, bailouts, online lives, and the true costs of shutdown. I had a great interview with Joseph Farrell and covered the whole topic, many of the different points and stories, and so I would strongly recommend you listen to that interview. It's 2 hours long. It's a lot to cover, but I don't want to repeat a lot of it tonight in Money and Markets. I covered what was going on with what I call the plandemic last week in Money and Markets, but again, in the interview tonight, Joseph and I chew through it in great detail because I think it helps you see this is a very complex phenomenon. A lot of combination of things are going on, and it's very, very important that you sort of see the full complexity of it. But let me talk a little bit about the big picture on where we are and the what I call going to the mattresses. Going to the mattress is an old mafia expression. When the mafia has a war, you know, they all move out of their houses and go to the mattresses. And that's sort of secret apartment set up with mattresses on the floor. And it connotes we're in the middle of a mafia war. First and foremost, I want to talk about three aspects of what's happening. First, it's a spiritual war. Second, there is a health phenomena happening. And then obviously we're in for serious gut-wrenching economics and political change. Let's hope we don't get to worse physical war than we are now, but we might. So this is first and foremost a spiritual war. We are dealing and have been dealing for a long time with very demonic, satanic forces. More and more openness now about some of the satanic and cult practices going on. The unfortunate reality is that many of the people in our societies are making money from poisoning or harming other people. And whether it's what we do day to day or what we finance, we have to be thinking about that. There's been a lot of conversation. John Rappaport has done some. I discussed some with Polly Tommy and Mary Holland. So two special reports now related to vaccines. But the conversation about how can doctors continue to do something that they know are going to harm children. There was one reference on vax to a doctor who thought it was okay to, you know, create vaccine injury in kids because that's what he had to do to provide for a successful practice and the economic resources he needed to bring up his children. You know, it's not okay. But the demonic things going on, in many cases, are implemented by me, my family, my neighbors, everybody. And we can't keep doing one thing and saying another and think it's going to work. I heard several times recently people saying, well, the pandemic's actually good because it's achieving what we need for climate change. And frankly, cleaning out the old people, getting rid of them, is going to be good for the climate. So it's okay. Now, here's the thing about spiritual warfare. If the devil can get you to go off sides and do things which are illegal or unethical, then, you know something, then you're fair game. Don't fall into all the traps that are going to be presented starting now of why it's okay to target this group or cut this group loose or not use, you know, the law doesn't apply to this group. Remember, that's the devil getting you offsides. It's interesting, I talked about this earlier this week, or last week. The war on the 60 plus and now 60, they seem to be honing in on 65. I think they, you know, somehow 60 wasn't resonating, but if they can get it at 65, they can do it. It doesn't surprise me that's the first group to get targeted because they have the knowledge, experience, and the time to stop the slide into transhumanism, which is the big danger here. You know, whoever they're targeting, don't fall for it. If you plan to targeting one group, you're going to be in one of the next groups. It's the way the game operates. Anyway, their goal truly in a spiritual warfare is your immortal soul. So you want to do everything you can to connect to the divine intelligence and stay connected. And as I've said for, you know, quite a while now, the middle of the road is evaporating. Your action here is to build your connection to the divine and nurture your faith. And remember the words in scripture, where two or more are gathered, there am I. Anything we can do to help, we want to, but I would strongly suggest you might want to get a copy of our prayer books. They're complimentary. Just send something to customer service. Or obviously you can call customer service too. We'll mail one out to you. So that's spiritual warfare. Let's talk about health phenomena. I keep thinking of the sonnet by John Donne. It starts, "Death be not proud, though some have called thee mighty and dreadful, for thou art not so." I've been covering the coronavirus in several of the last interviews, both our interview with John Rappaport, our interview tonight with Joseph Farrell, and then obviously a very related topic with Polly Tommy and Mary Holland on vaccines. As you know, my number one concern is that they're going to try and force a vaccine, which is very dangerous, not just to your health, but very dangerous to your mind. So, but in those discussions, I've been primarily focused on what's going on behind the pandemic. But I want to emphasize that I don't think lightly of what is happening to the extent that people are falling ill, and those of us who are dying are losing loved ones. Those are to be taken very seriously, so I want to stress that. I think something dangerous happened in Wuhan. And I keep thinking about it and talking about it because I think it's extremely important to get to the bottom of what really happened. Now, I've talked through in Money and Markets and then with Dr. Farrell some of the scenario or the possible scenarios. Another scenario that's beginning to look like it's more possible, I want to add to the mix, and that is, was Wuhan a test site for Dr. Lieber's brain-machine interface? So you have vaccines approved nationally, a vaccine mandate in China in December 2019. We see 5G switched on in Wuhan. Was there some kind of prototype of Dr. Lieber's brain-machine interface? If you read the research on his website, he's talking about using nanotechnology, which creates or sort of integrates into targeted areas of the brain and the nervous system, and basically creates a brain-machine interface inside your body. If that was being prototyped in Wuhan with Dr. Lieber working with the Wuhan lab, you may even have, you know, Gates has a huge research lab in China, it's in Beijing, but if you look at Microsoft, they've been working on the brain-machine interface for a long time. And of course, Gates is out proposing this ID 2020 for digital identities for every human being on the planet. So if you look at what Gates and Microsoft have been doing in this connection, it would explain if this was a human experiment gone very, very wrong with people dying, it could explain Gates' sudden resignation from Berkshire Hathaway and the Microsoft boards. And it would also explain DOD's announcement earlier this week that they were going to reconsider. They told the courts they're going to reconsider the awarding of the JEDI contract, so they're opening it up again. Some rumors saying that now it's going to be split with Amazon. But if you look at Lieber's arrest, if you look at Gates' sudden resignation, and then the rejiggering announcement on the JEDI, it sure looks to me like Gates is going to the mattress, and something, I'll bet you dimes to donuts, something went very awry in terms of a prototype or human experimentation. If you look at some of the videos from Wuhan, and I can't, there's no way to tell what's real and what might be fake, but it looks to me the same thing I see when I look at the children in vaxxed who've been injured or killed, or I read the book that I reviewed a year ago, Autism Vaccine, an amazing book. What you're watching is massive numbers of humans being poisoned. And after they're poisoned, they try and say, oh, well, it's a condition. No, it's not. It's poisoning. And the main form of poisoning is putting heavy metals into your brain and nervous system. And it's increasingly beginning to look to me like what we're talking about is massive brain injury across the board that's been given very many different names and titles. But in fact, there is between the global spraying and the nanoparticles in the food or the nanotechnology in the vaccines and drugs, we're looking at a massive experiment globally, which is in significant and serious violation of both the Nuremberg principles and the Nuremberg Code. Anyway, so my question is, was Wuhan a major mess in terms of human experiment that has set Mr. Global's chipping of the final inch on the smart grid way, way back? It's interesting, the Dr. Thomas Cowan, who's an anthroposophist doctor, talked in his video that we posted, not this week, but last week, and several subscribers sent it to me. He describes that a body being stressed by an extreme increase in electrification or a major increase in electrification will throw off massive amounts of viruses. It's the cells trying to get rid of the toxins. And I found that to resonate tremendously because I think there's definitely something going on here with messing with the biophysics of the body. Another question I have is there such a thing as, you know, because we talked during the California fires of the possibility of smart fires using digitized particles within a fire to move it, direct it, basically manage it. So Is it possible to have such a thing as a smart virus or a smart bacteria that AI can ride? I don't see how that might work, but as I said earlier today, maybe I'm missing some imagination. But the bottom line, I think something happened in Wuhan and it was something that was dangerous. Now, the next hotspot, of course, was Iran, and I don't assume that what happened in Wuhan also happened in Iran. It could have been something different, but obviously the financial patterns of China than Iran are more than a coincidence. You have a much weaker population given the long-term harm by the sanctions and covert warfare. And so something happened, but again, I'm not sure what. And then Italy, clearly something happened and continues to happen. Now they have a large Chinese population in those areas, and they're the ones who did the deal on the Silk Road of the G7. So that could make them a target. But it's hard to say what's happening because the numbers coming out of Italy indicate, something very significant in size. But when you drill down and look at the actual testing, as of yesterday, there were only two people who've died from COVID-19. The average age was almost 80 of the people who died, and it looks like you have a lot of pre-existing conditions. So the question is, are those really deaths from the virus, or those deaths from many other different things, combined with a bad flu, combined with people being scared to death by what they're hearing on TV and getting on the internet? Next, you have the US, and given the almost complete absence of a US testing apparatus, and what they do have to test is really not, in my book, reliable. It's hard to know what's going on, and I have no confidence in the US reports given what John Rappaport has taught us about prior pandemics. If you look at the group of people that I'm working with while I'm in the Netherlands, we had mild to bad flus over the last month. I can see how, if somebody who had pre-existing conditions and was not healthy and had been scared to death by the media, I could see how such a sickness could have resulted in a hospital stay or even death. To my way of thinking, the media hype is driving people into hospitals who normally would stay in bed for 2 to 3 weeks, wouldn't have to go to the hospital, and the potential to scare people to death is really there. Fear and isolation can be unbelievably damaging to the immune system, which is why you want to be careful to not isolate yourself in the way that's being encouraged, because it can be damaging to your immune system. This would not be happening if we had a healthy governance system on planet Earth, and it would not be happening if we hadn't wasted trillions and trillions of dollars on fraud and corruption over the last 3 decades. And my question, of course, is where did that money go, and how can we get it back? Because there are always ways to get it back. But I believe that many of the people dying right now are not dying; they're being killed. And to quote the great Utah Phillips, the people doing the killing have names and addresses. So please keep those who are sick or made sick by fear or dirty warfare in your prayers. And I would just have you remember the words of St. Timothy: God does not give us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. So next, let's turn to economic and political war, because this is the thing that will impact all of us. And if you look at the war going on, it's a dirty war, it's a covert war. It could turn much more dramatically physical. So one way or another, the economic and political war going on is definitely going to impact us. And of course, the question is, if Mr. Global hits the red button and there's no subsidy for the general population, you're talking about a very big permanent change. Even if it's just a trade war that never breaks out into a nuclear or dangerously physical war, there's no doubt that a lot of the false prosperity in America came from the China trade. And if that trade is unraveling, then, that false prosperity has got to go away. A lot of people have been asking me what's going to happen over the next 3 to 6 to 12 months, and the reality is no one knows. First of all, it's fluid, but to the extent that anybody has a plan, we're not privy to it. So all we can do is, what I do is I watch the financial patterns and try and sort of map out what's happening with the flow of resources, and that's my best way of taking a look at where things are going. So let me give you a couple of possibilities. One scenario is the pandemic op scenario that was described by Goldman Sachs to 1,500 of their clients. There's a story in Zero Hedge on it. I put the link up in News Trends and Stories. So let's say this is a 1 to 3 month beta test to try and put in the controls they need for a smart grid and technocracy and digital currencies. Goldman Sachs implied that this would go on for approximately 2 months and then things would go back to relative normality. The risks are in that 1 to 2 months we could go to martial law. We've already seen the president in the United States declare an emergency and then move to declare war powers to sort of deal with the situation. We know that the Senate passed the War Resolution Act to try and limit Trump's powers to go to war, for example, with Iran. But I do think there's a danger of martial law being used here, as well as turning off God knows what to get control or to maintain control, like turn off power, limit food. So there are a series of different risks. I think one of the biggest risks, particularly if war moves to a physical war, that we could have a draft instituted. And if you have kids in your family who are draft age, you need to be thinking about that. So number one possibility is the pandemic op sort of plays out in the 1 to 2 to 3 month area, as Goldman Sachs described to their clients in the Zero Hedge piece. Number two risk is that the push to get complete smart grid lockdown, transhumanist vision with vaccines that insert God knows what in our veins, they're on that push and they're going to keep going in that push until they're done. And of course, that means no return to normality and a modified form of slavery using digital currencies, machine brain interface, and 5G plus 6G, 7G, they'll keep going. Again, 5G being a crowd control technology. So one possible scenario is that it's full on to the complete control grid from now on, which is why if Wuhan was a human experiment that blew up, maybe you can't get to a full on control grid anytime soon. The third is the U.S.-China war escalates and one or both are destroyed. And this is if the United States should lose that war, this is the Deagle scenario, where the whole global developed market dollar bubble implodes. So if you've heard me talk in the Salier Report, I've gotten several questions from subscribers about what the Deagle projections are about fallen GNP and population in the developed world. And that's what it is, a U.S.-China confrontation where U.S. is not only loses the confrontation, but the result is they can't maintain the unipolar model in the dollar bubble. A fourth possible scenario is that this is a financial reset. And if you look at deficits and debt skyrocketing and inflation of household goods skyrocketing in many areas of the world, I think it's whatever's going on, it's definitely going to include a financial reset before this is over. Now, if you look at the technology we have, we can produce fantastic wealth with bringing the energy price down or some of the other things that can be done in space, etc. So the question in financial reset is, how are we going to handle the debt? Are we going to do some kind of debt jubilee? Many, many different ways that a financial reset could go, and tremendous variation in the different scenarios. Finally, one thing that's possible is a revolution in consciousness. Part of the challenge that Mr. Global has is the developed world population requires massive subsidy. What if that population were to see the problem and move to really fix it in innovative, intelligent ways? The challenge, of course, is we've waited way, way, way longer than we needed to sort of implement this this kind of strategy. Now, it's never too late, in my opinion, but there's no doubt what it means is that this is going to be a tougher conversion than otherwise, and many people are still going to get harmed in the challenges of this kind of transition. So the situation is very, very fluid. And it's extremely important that you spend your time sort of not following the baseball of how the situation is evolving, but that you, it's very critical for you to focus on your immediate situation and what you can do in your life to build your wealth and household responsibilities moving forward, particularly in the local environment. So attend on a spiritual level, both attend on the health level, attend on the economic and political level, and do whatever you can locally. And first and foremost, how are you going to find local, fresh food sources? The bottom line on the big picture is our current economic model doesn't work. It can't work. We kept a lot of false prosperity going by the China trade. That's over. It's unraveling, and it can unravel into significant financial reset and change, or it can unravel into all-out war. If seven billion people practiced the golden rule, we wouldn't be in this situation. And the reality is, when you look at the model, we cannot afford the level of corruption and organized crime, waste, and lawlessness that's been going on for, I don't know, it seems like my entire lifetime. So the organized crime can continue, but it's the parasite's going to have to eat its host. And that means depopulation on significant scale unless we can find a way to come back into alignment together. So the question continues that I talked about when I talked about Yellowstone in our movie of the year last year. What are we going to do about the Beck brothers? It was the big question coming into the end of the second season of Yellowstone, and it's the perfect metaphor for our global situation. Okay, money and markets. I'm working from the Wednesday close. We have the U.S. dollar index flying. It's up for the year 5.71. It was trading at 101.54. You see many currencies around the world just cratering against the dollar, and now the emerging markets really are in a dollar squeeze. Very significant. I want to talk about what I'm calling the central bank's money shovel, because we are watching the central banks print out and pump out money at a higher speed than even we saw in the bailouts. Of course, the bailouts sort of beat the trail. So let's start with the Federal Reserve. And first, I should say, if you look across the map of the planet, many, many central banks have radically reduced interest rates over the last 2 months, but certainly over the last week. It's quite astonishing. The Federal Reserve has been shoveling out so much money at such speed that even the Wall Street Journal announced, well, so much for the timidity of the Federal Reserve, meaning these guys aren't timid anymore. So let's just step through the monetary largesse of the Federal Reserve so far. They've had $1.4 trillion authorized to intercede in the repo market, and if you keep rolling it over, the numbers begin to skyrocket. They've created a lending facility for primary dealers with stock as collateral. It's almost like a repo market for stocks. It's a short-term. This was started in 2008, the primary dealer credit facility. The primary dealers are the big financial institutions that market the U.S. Treasuries and the basically their market distributors for the New York Fed's operation. The third item is purchase of 500 billion bonds and then 200 billion mortgage-backed securities. Real intimations, I think, that Freddie and Fannie are probably having some problems. The Fed is reported to be buying rapidly, and the expectation is that this number will be increased from essentially a combination of 700 billion to more. And that doesn't include, of course, what they're financing in the repo market and in the primary dealer credit line. To give you a sense of where this might go, the Fed in 2008 purchased more than $3 trillion in treasury and mortgage securities in three separate rounds of bond buying and was dubbed the quantitative easing of 2008-2014. So, and I absolutely believe there is more going that we don't know about. The fourth item is commercial paper market. They have set up a special vehicle to buy unsecured and asset-backed commercial paper. It's basically making loans to the companies that use the commercial paper market. And the Treasury has agreed to backstop any losses with $10 billion worth of potential losses in the Exchange Stabilization Fund. So the Fed is financing it, but the Exchange Stabilization Fund and the taxpayers are basically on the hook to take any losses. The Secretary of the Treasury talking about this said it could handle, it would be able to buy as much as $1 trillion worth of commercial paper. So add that to the mix. Then this Wednesday, yesterday, they announced that they were going to launch a program to support the money and market funds, and they're worried about a run in liquidity there. And again, the Treasury is backstopping losses with a $10 billion, I think that is also from the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Okay, so the next thing the Fed's doing, wait, there's more. They just announced swap lines with, let's see, it's Brazil, Denmark, Korea, Mexico, Norway, New Zealand, Singapore, and Sweden. So pretty significant swap capacity to help protect those if they need dollars. $30 billion was for the Danish bank, and my sort of question is, the Danes just passed a mandatory vaccine law, and my question is, was that part of the condition to get the, you know, whatever they got from the Federal Reserve? So my guess is the horse trading behind the scenes is pretty extractive. Okay, that's the Federal Reserve. Bank of England cut its interest rate again after having just cut them, so it's down to the bone. And announced a buying plan to buy another $200 billion of UK government bonds. The ECB, let me just read from Geopolitical Futures. Just before midnight, the European Central Bank unveiled a massive $820 billion, 750 billion euro emergency bond buying program. The program comes on top of monthly purchases of 20 billion euros that was launched last year. So they're adding up to that. So it means monthly purchases will exceed 80 billion euros. Then, not to be outdone, the Bank of Japan 4 days ago said it would double stock purchases. It's been buying ETFs. And they cut the interest rates also to near zero and said that they would also do bond purchases. So then in Germany, we see Germany using a government-owned bank to line up $600 billion of stimulus, and Merkel saying, oh, we'll consider having deficits. It's like, wow. So that's some of the monetary money shovel. Let's look at the fiscal money shovel. So monetary comes from the central bank, but let's take a look at Treasury. In the United States, Trump declared, at least on war powers now, but he declared emergency, and that opened up $40 billion of emergency funding. And then the Senate is now contemplating and working out a package of up to $1 trillion to be rolled out in three phases, including literally helicopter monies, with money being paid directly to citizens. We also saw today Italy's prime minister urging Brussels to unleash their 500 billion euro rescue fund. And as I said, Merkel is considering deficit financing. So if you look at the fiscal stimulus that's underway in combination with the monetary stimulus, it's quite astonishing. And of course, the question is, if you can't control the deficits and the debt spirals out of control, how are you going to stop interest rates from rising? And that's exactly what they did. We got the long treasury down to 99 basis points through 1%, but it's come back up quite dramatically. It's up almost 75 basis points from that bottom. So we see the long treasury at approximately 178 close on Wednesday. Now, so not surprisingly, fixed income, which was absolutely flying, turned down dramatically. So we have TLT now up 6.88% for the year. That's a remarkable performance given the fundamentals of the federal credit, but way, way down from where it was. So intermediate ETF up 5.33%. The bond aggregate down 4.76%. Wow, that hurts. And junk down 17%. And the clear message is risk off. As I said, interest rates rising about 75 basis points in the long end in the Treasury curve. And I think that's fear of deficits and a debt spiral. We're seeing bills going to, on the Treasury yield curve, it shows 4 basis points, so basically zero. But we're getting some reports from the market of negative interest rates in the bill market, actually, as you execute with the dealers. And again, the problem is you can print plenty of dollars to deal whatever problems you have, whether they're in the stocks, bonds, or derivatives markets. Derivatives is, of course, the big 800-pound girl in the room. You've got 600 trillion globally of nominal amount of derivatives. In terms of present value, I'm sure it's much, much smaller, but it's still a very big number. And of course, you've got, if you're the Fed, you've got the wherewithal to deal with it all. The question is, of course, how are you going to deal with the inflation that's going to ensue? Particularly, the thing that's going to make the inflation very hard to deal with is the income deflation that's going to go along with it, is, you know, the ultimate squeeze on any productive capacity and many, many small businesses in the economy. The S&P now down 25.43%, clearly in bear territory. Home builders down 43.53%. Remember, they've been outperforming the S&P for quite a bit here. VGK, the European ETF, down 36.60%. The Germany down 38.67%. Developed markets down minus 32.45%. Large cap China outperforming everybody, down 22.14%. And emerging markets down 31.16%. So we're clearly either in a very major correction, which is possible still, or we may be entering bear territory. And certainly if you look at the announcements of global recessions on their way, here and on their way, that's very plausible. If you look through the index into individual stocks, you can see that many stocks are clearly in a bear territory, and even some companies and industries are headed into very difficult times, if not bankruptcy. Interestingly enough, Jeremy Grantham came out this week. He's the head of GMO, one of the largest investors in the world, one of the most respected investors in the world, and came out and said he's been waiting for the U.S. stock market to come down for a long time. It's been a very frustrating wait. But one of the things he pointed out, at the current levels, the S&P could be expected to do 2 to 3% return over the long term, and emerging markets could be expected to return to about 6%. So he was feeling like a man getting ready to buy. As far as I can tell, the deleveraging is not cleaned out yet. There's more to go. And one thing we don't know is how much of this is being triggered by derivatives and how expensive are the derivatives to manage. The commodity index down 35.23%, clearly very deflationary. Gold is now down 1.45%, not handling it well because of the cash liquidity issues, and then silver down 32.79%. I'm seriously contemplating ordering a big, big order for Solaris silver coins. In from one of the dealers in Franklin Sanders Network, he wrote today, quote, FYI, we were just notified by one of the Swiss refineries that they are raising premiums on ingots, both 1 kilogram and 100 grams bars, by 20%, effective immediately. That's amazing. So let me read it again. We were just notified by one of the Swiss refineries that they are raising premiums on ingots by 20%, effective immediately. Wow. Oil now down 55.84%. The oil card is clearly happening. I think it's intentional. I think it's a plan. A lot of the quarantine and the sort of lockdown is designed to produce the least demand for oil and energy. And there's no doubt that the oil card is hitting the de-dollarizers very hard. To give you a sense, Russia's oil revenues will be $40 billion less than anticipated. In fact, the Saudis have had to cut their 2020 budget by $13.3 billion. Saudi, Russia, and the UAE all plan to increase production in April. That could bring it down more. And so you've got many private oil firms in the U.S. and the Europe, particularly U.K. and Norway, that could, you know, you're talking about serious pain, bankruptcies, and consolidation. So let's turn to the top stories. In the big picture, a couple more comments. Ellis Medavoy is one of my favorite people interviewed by John Rappaport. Ellis is a pseudonym for a guy who used to do very high-level spin and propaganda. My guess from reading his background is probably for the Executive Committee of the Council on Foreign Relations, among other. He admits readily he was sort of a freelancer. Ellis Menavoy was very eloquent at explaining why it's important for purposes of propaganda to give people one simple concept that will umbrella an entire complex phenomena. And the concept, in fact, may not be true, like Al-Qaeda. but then they have a simple concept to sort of umbrella lots of different false flags, terrorist attacks, violent behavior. You can just say, oh, it's all Al-Qaeda. It's a simple construct that helps them explain what's happening. I'm very concerned that we not sort of get sucked into the simple concept and see the complexity of it. It's very important to have a good map of reality when you're navigating. But my major concern always has been not what's going on with the health in the pandemic. My major concern is there's a push for vaccine mandates, which I believe is chipping people. And I also believe it's physically dangerous for you. So my major concern is the solution, not the problem. And part of it is vaccines, but part of it is not being prepared economically for the kind of changes underway, particularly in terms of establishing local fresh food sources. There's no doubt that we are facing an invasion, I mean a literal invasion on our intimacy, whether it's what we put in our food, what we put in our mouth, what we put in our head, who can come into our home, who can listen and document and use all the data from our home in very invasive ways. So absolutely beware the solutions, particularly solutions that invade your intimate space. The drumbeats of war. I talked last week about the War Resolution Act that's passed. It was rumored that Trump was going to veto it, but I haven't seen a veto or him sign it into law. So it's definitely something I want to keep an eye on, especially now that he has emergency powers and has invoked the Defense Act. So one of the reasons I'm particularly nervous about this is FASB 56 gives the executive branch tremendous leeway to play games with money to get things going around the world using foreign groups, foreign intelligence, or military funding them, or mercenaries. So, and of course, this is a particularly dangerous aspect. In Europe, Ron Paul points out that the Atlantic Council is lobbying Europe to declare, to make an Article 5 declaration under NATO, which is a very dangerous thing. We talked in our interview with Niels Harrit about that happening after 9/11, and it's a particularly chilling thing to listen to. Interestingly enough, there was a major military operation scheduled for Europe at this time. So 40,000 U.S. and NATO troops are going to meet in Europe with massive equipment brought over from the United States for training exercises. It's all part of the encircling Russia, is what people thought. The message from Defender 20, which is the name of the exercise, anyway, Defender 2020, the message had gone out, oh, we're going to continue to do the exercise. Everything's being canceled, but all those soldiers are free to sort of wander border to border across Europe. It was very interesting. And there are rumors that the Italians just refused to do their bit to support it. And finally, they, rather than shut the whole thing down because they'd moved so many troops to Europe for the training, they agreed to do something very modified and then go home. And it sounds to me like the Europeans just put a kibosh on it, which would be very interesting. Europe at this time would stand up to the United States in a big way. I think one of the things that's happening in Europe that is fascinating is Denmark passing the vaccine mandates. And it wouldn't surprise me if that was a condition of getting their swap agreement from the U.S. Central Bank, the Federal Reserve. Well, it's a big deal. Even Kiplinger declares that the U.S. recession had begun, and it had clearly begun globally, but the U.S. looked like the strongest horse in the race. But that's changed with whatever the pandemic is. Some industries are hurting a lot more than others. Boeing is in real trouble, and they were in trouble before this all started. But this is going to make life much harder. They're one of the, they just got downgraded, and it's one of the corporations that's gone down and taken down its letter of credit so that it has plenty of liquidity to navigate what's ahead. The airlines are pushing the White House for a some kind of loan package or subsidy, but there's no doubt that the airlines don't have the capacity to go much longer without serious financial ramifications, consolidation, or bankruptcy. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. If the Goldman scenario is operative, then they can dig their way out. If it's not operative, all bets are off. And it's quite astonishing to see the fall of Boeing. How are you going to have a successful space force and military industrial intelligence if companies like Boeing destroy themselves like that? It's quite astonishing. We saw last week 600 arrests for a Mexican cartel arrests. And part of the issue is with reverse globalization, if you're going to bring a lot of people in manufacturing back, you can't tolerate the level of street crime that we have had in the United States for the last 20 or 30 years. What's the plan for China RX? I did a review several years ago of a great book called China RX about our extraordinary dependency for drugs on China. And, you know, clearly there's a covert war going on between China and the United States. And that's not a situation where you want to depend on them for your antibiotics. It's very tricky. Now, how fast can they help Big Pharma go? I don't know. I think our problem is we have way too much Big Pharma. Online education, business, and tourism are clearly skyrocketing. And it's interesting. Zoom stock last week, I think it was Friday, was up 23%. And Campbell Soup was not down by a lot. I think they were down 2% when I looked. So Campbell Soup and Clorox and Zoom are all significantly outperforming. There's a lot of effort to promote the idea that, one, we don't need an election, or two, we can do online elections, particularly now that Microsoft has this new wonderful election software. Don't go there. Don't do that. Don't let that happen. You know, don't play that game. We absolutely won an election. Bill Gates, as I said, heads to the mattress. More and more is coming out about what Gates has been doing with his ID 2020 and getting nanotechnology into vaccines and on and on and on, and brain machine interface. This whole package of the smart grid going, the sort of last transhumanist inch, it's essentially the mark of the beast. It's a slavery system. I now think the world's going to seriously turn and look at Bill Gates and what he's been up to with fury and anger, particularly because this is not a company that got built on its own merit. I think a lot of it had to do with who and what has a back door. Anyway, I'm going to be keeping an eye on where is Gates, what is he doing, what's going on, because I think that may ultimately help us solve the mystery of whatever happened in Wuhan. Biden has swept the sort of Democratic nominee. We see Tulsi Gabbard drop out, Bernie drop out. Biden won Florida, Illinois, and Arizona. He can thank the coronavirus pandemic for that. But he is heading for the Democratic nominee now. I don't think Biden can win, and I don't think Biden can even make it through the election physically. So the question is, are they going to have a brokered convention where they flip it to somebody else? My guess is that that's a reasonably high priority. If they, now it's possible they'll let Biden be the nominee if they think they can cancel the election, but I just don't see Biden being able to go the distance or tolerate the real transparency about what he and his son were up to in the Ukraine. I think the whole swamp DC kickback system is in real trouble, and it's so ingrained both in the political class and the bureaucracy, that I think it's making it impossible to really seriously reform what's going on in D.C. In China, the reports are that the Chinese have managed to truly quarantine whatever was going on, and you're down to very few new cases and deaths in China. The blame game between China and the United States has heated up, and now China has expelled a significant number of U.S. journalists. And China is working very hard to build back their economy. I talk about it more with Joseph tonight in the interview. But I think there's no doubt that whatever is going on is going to soak up a lot of their liquidity, which means that their ambitions for One Belt, One Road are going to have to go on the shelf or are going to be way, way slowed down. And I just want to say again, please focus on the nuts and bolts during this situation, on your practical day-to-day demands, on what you need to do to sort of run your life and household, given what you have to work with in either your industry or what's going on locally. Just be very wary of any source of media or entertainment that can bring mind control. So I have to work on the internet a lot, and it's a challenge, but anything you can do to remove devices from your life that could involve entrainment. The danger here is the entrainment can do some incredible damage, or if it influences your decision-making, you cannot act in your own best self-interest. So please beware. Our hero this week is a gentleman named Mats Jarlstrom, who is an Oregon engineer who figured out how to significantly improve the traffic lights. And the local officials wouldn't listen to him, but he was very persistent and finally got it all sort of documented, proved, and got the local officials to change. And it's a perfect example of somebody doing one small thing that can make extraordinary difference in terms of saving a community's time. And I want to thank the subscriber who brought it to our attention, because it was a perfect kind of person we like to highlight and honor on the Solaria Report. Our blast from the past this week is called Gifting to the Children We Love. In fact, one of our teammates made it into a little small book called Gifting to the Children We Love. You can buy it at the store. But we also have it for free online, and so you can read it online or print it out if you want. It was an attempt to help my clients when I was doing individual investment advisory, which I'm no longer doing, sort of think creatively about how they could support and nurture the children in their lives, whether it was their kids or their grandkids or kids in their extended family or kids in their neighborhood. One of the things I discovered is you had people who had money and no time, and they also had other people in their family with time but no money. And because no one had both the time and money, no one was acting to help the kids. But one of the things I tried to sort of inspire is, look, you know, let one guy contribute his time and let the other guy contribute his money. And then the world opens up all these wonderful things you can do for those kids. So if you're looking to help the kids in your life and want some ideas, it was very fun to do. Gifting to the Children We Love. And then in Take Action, we have The Deer's Cry, which is on page 53 or 54 of the prayer book. You can, on the website, there's a little copy of the cover, and you can link to the PDF. But again, if you want a complimentary copy, we're happy to have it. This week, we had St. Patrick's Day. We also had the first day of spring. You know, a good week in that way. St. Patrick's was the guy who was said to push the snakes out of Ireland. So I thought that was a very appropriate week to have St. Patrick's Day. But the Deer's Cry is said to be the prayer that St. Patrick prayed to protect him and his men when the Druids were after them. And for those who know me, the Deer's Cry is a prayer I pray almost every day. And I'll never forget, I had one client who was a devoted atheist, but got in real serious trouble. And I persuaded her to try the pray the Deer's Cry two or three times every day. And she agreed to do it. And she called me back several weeks later and said, you know, this really works. And let's go to the movies. I want to recommend to you a wonderful documentary called Maiden. And it's about a woman, Tracy Edwards, who put together and led the first all-female crew to compete in the Whitbread Round the World race. It's a yachting competition that covers 33,000 miles last 9 months. It's a grueling, grueling race. And the story is just an excellent reminder that the extraordinary things that happen when one person gets a vision of what they want to do and a team comes together and you have hard work, caring people, caring families, real teamwork, and it's amazing what can happen. And the reality is we're never going to have a healthy economy unless we have strong individuals who can do that. And so we need to get out of the business of building things to make fees while we poison our children and general population. But Maiden is just a very inspiring story about a very inspiring leader and group of people. And you see the power of what real leadership can do. Our interview this week is with Dr. Joseph P. Farrell. We chew through the entire coronavirus pandemic. I asked him to do it the last minute, so we moved the Chuck Marone interview back till next month, and Joseph took the time out and jumped on. I'm very grateful to him for doing that because I think we were able to work through all the different stories and many of the different risks and possibilities here, so I really would recommend that you listen to that one. So there it is, Cui Bono Coronavirus with Dr. Joseph P. Farrell. Okay, two reports in from communities that seem to be handling this situation fairly well. One from Taiwan. I just wanted to read it. A friend of mine lives in Taiwan. He told me they handled this virus very well, even though they're only 80 miles from China and have lots of travel back and forth. Note, schools open, businesses open, big sports events not shut down. I asked him to confirm the below article is correct. His response is below. The link to that is in the notes. My Taiwan friend's comment is, schools are still operational. Yes, the article is well written and extremely accurate. Sporting events are still continuing to be played. The most important thing Taiwan has done is to learn from the SARS bug and implement all necessary precautions. You have your temperature taken when you enter most buildings, businesses, or transit terminals. No foreigners are allowed into Taiwan as of 16 March. The other is a subscriber sent in from Amarillo. Amarillo has two confirmed cases as of last night. They had a press conference. Infectious disease doctor in charge, very low-key and calm. Mayor also talked. They urged people to use common sense. Mayor said this was a community of trust, and they were going to trust people and businesses to do the right things. She said use common sense and pray a lot. It was a short-term situation. Everything would be fine. So she's not crying for military to help. They just acted like another day at the office. Okay, in both these situations, Taiwan and Amarillo, you've got leadership that are intelligent, makes sense, and are not trying to play this to get further ahead in the New World Order. If you have leaders like that, just count your lucky stars and support them. I'm telling you, forget the presidential election. You need to want to have the best possible local leadership that you can get. Then somebody posted today at subscriber input, or this week at subscriber input, who would ever have thought that giving someone a hug would one day be considered a revolutionary act? I just want to read you what I wrote. I would. During the period of physical harassment, there were periods when no one wanted to talk to me, be seen with me, or to touch me. They threatened or bought away the men I was dating. They threatened family and friends. I became an untouchable. Typically, the only person who would talk to me was someone I was paying and transacting with. There were a few exceptions, and some of them were plants and spies. You learn to love privacy in your own company. Isolation is one of the top divide-and-conquer techniques. It destroys the field and cuts off access to the divine intelligence. So we must each have strategies to deal with it. The goal is to persuade you to comply so you will not be alone. So not being alone is a condition precedent to not being alone. To having a community is compliance, obedience. You will obey. It's right out of They Live. This is why training from my African-American childhood friends and access to related churches really saved my life. They have generations of technology that help you understand how to deal with this. Anyway, you can see more of my comments and subscriber input. Dear Catherine, regarding the coronavirus, I've had a thought which I would like to share with you and hear your opinion. I've been asking why people are making hamster purchases of toilet paper, and when asked, they cannot answer why they buy toilet paper. So could that be that it's been an attempt of mass mind control with the topic toilet paper being still something harmless to check if the system-wide works before going on with a more serious program? Thanks for your thoughts on that. Love and hugs, despite Corona. I absolutely agree. I think the emphasis on toilet paper is likely a smart, it's part mind control rollout. I think it's important to understand it's also part driven by the fact that investing money in toilet paper and paper products is a much better financial investment right now than bank deposits, stocks, bonds, or cash. So let's break toilet paper down as a straight investment proposition. First of all, it's rising in price and value. It's certainly something you're going to need, so you're going to have an expense in the future to go buy toilet paper, but it's not perishable. So if you buy it now, you know, it's good for a long, long, long time. Even if you don't need it or plan to use it, you can certainly trade with other people. So if you've ever run out of toilet paper and lived without it for a period, you know that it can be incredibly devastating to your sense of well-being. And so here we have a non-perishable, doesn't perish. Food perishes, but this doesn't perish, and it has a highly inelastic demand. Okay, so if we make paper into toilet paper, right now it's more valuable than paper made into dollars. Think of this as the poor man's rush into treasuries. So you've got something that's going up in value that you know you're going to need or you can use to trade when almost every asset around you looks like it's going down in value. So, and many of them are things you can't really, you know, you can't eat or you can't trade for food. Hi, Catherine. What do you think is the best or safest alternative if our main goal is to protect our cash savings for capital preservation? Keep the money in bank accounts. Buy bank CDs, buy short-term U.S. treasuries or notes expiring in a few months. I've read that FDIC provides insurance up to $250,000 for money held in bank accounts. There's also some SDIC insurance that money kept in the brokerage accounts. Thanks. I would recommend you check out our 2016 annual wrap-up, Where to Stash Your Cash. The PDF goes through all the different options. Now, since then, we've seen FASB 56 really decimate what is left, in my opinion, of the credit. I mean, I would, if I was rating the U.S. government, given what they did on FASB 56, they'd get a junk bond rating from me. The other thing that's changed in addition to the deterioration of the federal credit is FDIC is not what they used to be. They've played games on getting people paid out and other things. So I think it's incredibly important that your bank is well capitalized and has a good, real banking business, you know, and sees customers as their number one. So if you have the right kind of bank, I think that's clearly a place. But there are many others, and I would encourage you to read Where to Stash Your Cash. Hi, Catherine. In recent Money in Markets and other segments, you mentioned the need to de-dollarize the oil producers. I think what you mean is to cut off income to the oil producers who are de-dollarizing. Then you go on. My question is, are the oil producers corporations or nation states? In this case, they're definitely nation states. The oil producers are a very important part of that. And of course, Russia's number one. Also, you suggested the bottom will not be in until the margin calls are cleared out. My question here is, when will we know when that is? Is there any way for one to monitor the margin calls and gain some insight into potential bottoms? I think it's hard to tell because you've got hedge funds, you've got dark markets, and we've not finished the deleveraging. So there's no way to know. but I will do some more research and see what ideas I can find before the equity overview. Hi, Catherine. There is a combo of several Saker site posts. As it points out, Pompeo, etc., are evil, stupid enough to do a bioweapon attack on China. I've posted several of the pieces that Saker has posted, including the one you sent in. I tend to believe that whatever happens, if it is dirty warfare, and John Rappaport reminds me that chemical warfare is not included in biological warfare, so I think the scenario, whatever happened, came from much higher than the White House. So I don't see this as a Trump administration move. I could be wrong, but I think it comes from much higher up. And I think the game is whatever was going on in the Wuhan lab with Charles Lieber and whatever they were up to. I think the game is a much bigger, deeper game than just U.S. versus China, because there are two economic problems. One is, you've kept your population subsidized by playing the Chinese trade card. And with that trade card going away, you have two problems. One is, how are you going to get China back in the box? But the other thing is, how are you going to manage and handle your population, which doesn't understand that they're quite swimming in a sea of subsidy. And so they got two big problems going on. I've had several people ask me this week about, they've gotten a census form asking for a lot of data, and they want to know how they should respond and what the issues are in terms of whether or not you respond, what you're legally required to do, and what the issues are if you don't do it. Anyway, I've reached out to my attorney because we've written several pieces in the past about the, you know, what the state of play is on responding carefully to a census questionnaire. They can be quite invasive, and the issue is, can you avoid just pouring out more data just because they want it? Anyway, I'll be back at you when I sort of get a chance to talk the whole thing through with my attorney. Somebody sent in the statistics from Cheryl Atkinson. God love her. She put up the statistics of who had died so far in the United States. So the first 59 deaths from the coronavirus. And it's basically very old and sick. And the numbers are nothing compared to the normal flu season. And of course, out of the first 62 deaths, you had 29 from one nursing home called the Kirkland Center in King County, where basically Microsoft is in the Seattle area. So when you look at these statistics, you think, you know, I hate to say it, it sounds just like John Rappaport was warning. And again, in the United States, I think the U.S. statistics are highly, highly suspicious, because it's very possible for people to die of many different things, but still test positive for coronavirus if you believe what the doctors are saying. So I am unbelievably skeptical of the U.S. statistics, and I have yet to hear of anybody I know who knows somebody who's had the coronavirus, but I'll just keep looking. Hi, Catherine. I've got a couple of questions I was hoping you could help me with. I'm not sure if either fall under the umbrella of giving investment advice. So then you ask me a whole series of questions. Some do and some don't. One question is about, should you rent or sell a property? And I don't know enough about your situation to know if it makes sense. One of the things I do believe is Illinois is a very difficult jurisdiction to be in given their financial problems. So that argues to sell. At the same time, if you can get new tenants in there and are confident of your ability to keep tenants going in there, I think given the sales and other transaction costs, you know, why bother? It's hard to find ways of generating a good income in this environment. And if the property in Illinois can do that, I would certainly use it that way. Then you also had a question about your father's insurance. I would need to know, again, a lot more to just give you an opinion. I'm not an insurance expert, but if you look at the numbers you provide and making some assumptions about life expectancy, etc., if I thought the insurance company was a pretty strong credit that could endure it looks to me like you're much better off keeping it going than not. But I don't know what your dad's income is or the particulars of his situation. So again, I don't have enough information, but my guess is that, you know, I would keep it going so long as the insurance company is a good credit. Then you just couldn't make this up. Somebody sent an article from the Wall Street Journal. The SEC has voted to ease audit requirements for smaller companies. So we really are in Never Never Land accounting now. And one of the reasons they said they wanted to do it was these companies were making life-saving vaccines. You just can't make this stuff up. So thanks to the coronavirus and the possibility for life-saving vaccines, we get to basically destroy the last remaining transparency. You know, so now there's no transparency at the federal government level. There's almost no transparency at some of the state and local levels. And now we're going to exclude small business. We know the big guys can get national security waivers. It must feel like you have an epidemic of hubris, and it will never go away unless the parasite kills the host or the host kills the parasite. Some days I can't tell which is worse. Then there's a great comment from Texas talking about how everything is being shut down. It's from Rebel Commander. He says, "We do live in interesting times." Oh, yes. "Hi, Solari team. Is there a place on your website that keeps current recommendations on the following?" Then you ask a series of questions, some of which cross over the line into investment advice, which I can't give on the Solari report as a regulatory matter. So in terms of where, how you find a credit union or a bank, what you need is a bank rating service. Weiss is one. There are a couple of others. You can easily find them. But if you do a short subscription to one, you can look at all the credit unions and the or the banks in your area. They may not do credit unions, and get a good sense of who's got the strong ratings. And then you need to do the due diligence on each of them. So we don't make recommendations at banks. I'll work when I do a consultation with people, I'll work to help them do a search if they want. But you really, for what you want, I would go to a bank rating service. The second thing you ask is about the brokerage system. The brokerage system is pretty much highly levered, and I don't think there's a lot in the brokerage system that can take a really serious run without Fed support. So the question for you is, what are the brokers that you think, in the worst case, will get the institutional support they need from Treasury and the Fed because they have those institutional responsibilities and the system really needs them? They're kind of a system utility. The one that's the most system utility-like is Fidelity, but there are others. So that's what I would look for on that side. And then if there are liquidity problems in the Treasury market, you say, what actionable intelligence is offered for where to park your money? I would check out also the 2016 wrap-up, Where to Stash Your Cash. Or it might have been 2015. I'll have a link put in the subscriber links by tomorrow night. You're looking for institutions, and particularly banks, that have a real business in a real economy with people who are trustworthy and is well capitalized. That's what you need. And so, you know, pretend for a second that all this federal credit goes away. Who's got a real business with a real culture and real talented people who will be able to survive and endure? You know, my bank is the National Bank of Malvern. They certainly fit that description. I did two interviews with them there in the library. They're two Solari reports. It'll give you a feel for what you're looking for. But if you take a good bank rating service and figure out who's got a very strong rating in your area, you can certainly review and research and find one that will fit that description. And again, take a look at Where to Stash Your Cash from 2016. If you read my caveat emptor article that I published last year as part of The Real Deal of Missing Money with my attorney, Carolyn Betts, it explains why I think the federal credit has deteriorated significantly. So I don't put much store in anything related to the federal credit at this point, because I'm very concerned that they're doing some kind of cut and run. It sounds to me like what you're looking for is a financial advisor who understands what's really going on under the carpet. Now, as a regulatory matter, I cannot recommend one to you, but I will say that they are available, and I'm sure you can find one. The other thing I will say is if you ever come to our December dues in Malvern, we have a couple of great asset managers and financial advisors and bankers who show up. They seem to congregate at that one event, and you can certainly meet them all there. Then a new one, what a month with more to go. How low can the Dow go? Where's the plunge protection team? Have they, the Fed split from Trump or just a short drop? What a good way to remind Trump who is in charge. Some folks I know who are pretty well connected have told me this is a get Trump out op. Normally when you have an op this big, they're stacking lots of functions. And getting Trump out may easily be one of those functions, but it's far from the only one. It's amazing how quickly the economy can be slowed down. None of this was on anyone's radar in January. Actually, it was. You had a whole bunch of CEOs who did a cut and run. And so it was. They got their money out in February. Now, wow, seems like we live in a culture where we can still be easily controlled. When South by Southwest canceled, I was certain that this was a deep state op and would blow up big. Amarillo is only a short drive away by Texas standards, so I know it's longer than just a short drive. We have an event in Amarillo on June 20th. Hoping to meet and see you there. Missed my celerity sanity, like walking on a high wire without a net. Okay, next one. Catherine, your thoughts about the state of our currency has opened my eyes. For years, I've thought about the difficult circumstances that the indigenous population has had to deal with in Canada and in the U.S. I've lived in Canada for many years. This has given me firsthand knowledge about the problems faced by the native population living on the reserve land. Regarding the possibility of basic income, government stipends, and the death of cash, as COVID-19 seems to suggest, I see the treatment of the indigenous population as being test subjects for many, many decades. My opinion, seeing what guaranteed government income has done to eradicate the Aboriginal culture of self-sufficiency, it has left the population wholly dependent on government funds. The level of alcoholism, drug dependency, culture destruction, and child abuse would bring a person to tears. While their living conditions are for the most part dependent on funds from the federal government, I see their experience as a lesson to the middle class. I was having a conversation with valued family members the other day. They seemed to believe that they were above this. What is happening to the Aboriginal population couldn't possibly happen to them. How have you dealt with people that cannot see the writing on the wall, even though you care for them? Well, the indigenous population is absolutely a prototype for the full population. You saw the same thing in the United States with both the Indian population, the African American population. What's interesting is the vast majority of people cannot see that kind of writing. Social status is such an important part of the sort of self-identification that it's very important to think, oh, well, those people are, you know, are lower class and that could never be me. What you can do is to see these things coming and continuously learn in a direction that best protects yourself, and then suggest similar actions to those you care about. And over time, some of them will follow you because they will appreciate that you somehow know what to do that works. So if they respect your learning direction and opinion, you can really help them just by demonstrating your leadership and helping them take action. I think the hard part is when you have people you love who've digested a huge amount of entrainment and mind control and can actively even work to sabotage and harm you. So sometimes you're going to have to cut people loose if the personal integrity is low. Otherwise, you're just going to have to help them take action. And, you know, you can't tell them why they need to go to the right, but you can tell them you need to go to the right. And they can see it's working for you. If you haven't read The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis, I would really recommend it, because first and foremost, this is a spiritual war. And if you're in a spiritual war, you need to play to win. And that means you can love people And you can help them if they want your help, but you cannot protect them from themselves. It's dangerous to try. I've found it's absolutely essential to focus your time and resources on helping those who want your help and not worry about those who don't. If you're helping people who want your help and what you're doing succeeds for you and for them, then more will come and more will follow. You've got to be ruthless about your time and resources. Okay, that's it for Ask Catherine. A lot of good questions this week. Conclusion. Next week, coming up with Thomas Meyer, Fear Not, we're going to be talking about some of the things Steiner says about either pandemics or situations like this. Then the following week, we launch into our first quarter wrap-up. We're going to be doing the theme first, The Real Deal on Going Local with Patrick Wood. We're going to be talking about The Final Mile. And then the following week, The Real Deal on Going Local with Chuck Marone. We're going to be talking about the model for infrastructure financing. Anyway, so lots on The Real Deal on Going Local, because so much of what we're going to need to be doing is making the local work for us. So until next week, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you absolutely need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.